podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Sometimes you take a little bite, and life goes ahead and gives you a whole pickle slice. Thank you, life.
And sometimes you spend $5 or more, and the McDonald's app gives you 20% off the whole order. That means you can get a McCrispy and a Quarter Pounder with cheese and a new lemonade and still save. Thank you, McDonald's app. Limited time only at participating McDonald's. Valid one time per day. Visit McDonald's app for details.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Hey guys, what's going on? Welcome back to the Leading Edge Cricket Podcast. It is a long time between coffees, but Rich has just been and he's gone and got his coffee. And, you know, if there's one thing us English like to do, it's complain. And we've been spoilt this summer for four test matches of absolute brilliance, of Bazball, of McCullum and Stokes and all the good things that's gone on with it. And now we've got to kind of coming back down to ground and actually analysing how good is this England cricket team. It's good to be back. I'm Rob. This is Rich. Welcome to the podcast.
We're back, Rob. Rob is alive. That's a good thing. That's one of the positives we're going to take into this podcast.
Take your wins.
We've missed you, Rob. We've missed you. I tried to do a couple on my own. And then when it realized Rob was going to be out for a little bit longer, we thought we'd just put a pin in it. There was no real Red Bull cricket anyway, was there? The MCC, the powers that be, the ECB, they don't care about Red Bull cricket, it seems. We're in August now. It's White Ball Fest, isn't it?
It is.
So we missed a lot, but in some ways, did we miss anything? Yeah, we probably did, actually. But it is great to be back, Rob, and I'm glad you're doing pretty well, mate.
Thanks, mate. Good to be back. So there's like plenty forest going on, Rich. Before we get into England, and then we've got a whole host of England conversations, the Zach Crawley debate, Alex Lees debate, Ollie Pope, Ben Foulkes, Harry Brook, Stuart Broad, England's number eight. We've got loads to go through, but I want to start with back-to-back performances, Rich. You went Pfeiffer.
Oh,
followed it up. Oh yeah, you're like, oh yeah, remember I did that Pfeiffer, Mr. All-rounder, and then follows it up the following week with a nice 50 as well. Is living the dream.
75, let's be right, you know.
Question marks, could you bat at eight for England?
no, because I came up against someone a slightly quicker than I've spaced all year and I lasted two balls. So it's like when you used to bowl at me, it tried to throat me. And I gloved off to the keeper yesterday. So, yeah, I know my level now. I'm a veteran, happily playing second team cricket. That's where I perform. Not like that first team stuff yesterday.
Nice. So, kicking into England, it's nice to have a little bit of red ball cricket going on because it is a white ball heavy month and, you know, foreseeing into the future and the changes that are being made. The Ashes is coming in July, not just because of the 100, but...
No.
In parallel, it works really nice for the ECB. So
convenient.
It is nice to have that block to kind of finish your summer months with a bit of Red Bull cricket.
Yeah. We knew from the start that this schedule was a shambles. It's proven that. The Royal London is obviously kicked to the back again, isn't it? The 100 is there. The 100, yay. The 100 as an event, the cricket, is not too bad. It's just the fact that they're prioritising it over absolutely everything else is what sticks in the throat, isn't it? So... what's going to happen? Andrew Strauss is still fiddling around. There's even talk about potentially a new Red Bull competition next year. Lord knows what's going on. It seems like I'm starting to wonder whether Andrew Strauss wants to absolutely destroy county cricket rather than help it. He's going to be one of those. It's going to be a bit like, I was going to use a Brexit comparison, but that's a dreadful idea, isn't it? But just somebody wanting to come up with an idea that might help. And in the end, it absolutely destroys the world. Bit of a Marvel sort of theme, isn't it? You know, for the right intentions.
In this lineage of the universe, it's all going wrong.
Exactly. So little tinkers around the edge is probably a hell of a lot better than massive wholesale competition changes. And there is that whole 100 conversation that needs to be had, but we are not having that today. Off season will be when we're having that, Rob. Test match. We're back to test match cricket, aren't we? And that's a comforting feeling. And I think we're all happy about that. However,
I absolutely love it. It always a test match always kicks off about 10 p.m. out here, unless there's been rain the day before. So it's kind of like that. Oh, late evening, I'll just stay up for a couple of hours. I'll just do a couple of hours and watch it. And then I fall to sleep about midnight. And then I wake up at six or whenever the kid's up. And I feel like I've not been asleep because I feel like I've dreamt about the game going on. And when I wake up in this nightmare that England's been rolled and we've gone back 6 months, mate. And I think I'm still living the dream.
That's the thing, isn't it? That's what I was going to say. It's like, yeah, basically, we're happy it's back. And then 2.5 days later, we're like, oh, man, yeah. But we've been a little bit spoiled, haven't we? The biggest difference so far in this series, well, there's two big differences, isn't there, really? We had 3 games against New Zealand, 1 against India. Yes, there was a bit of pace there, the Bumrahs of this world and the Bolt, etc. But there was no real absolute gas, was there, coming at you from all angles. And that's what South Africa have brought in this game. But also the big difference is that England had to set. South Africa, I assume, won the toss. England have been chasing all summer in Test match cricket. From the first ball to the last ball, we've been chasing where we are, allowing the other team to set the tempo for the game. And South Africa put us in, and suddenly we were a little bit more unsure of what to do. You know, by now, let's you know, South Africa won by an innings and 12 runs. If you're living under a rock, didn't realise what the score was, that's what it was. 2.5 day defeat for England, 2.5 day amazing victory for a very, very impressive and positive South African team. However, I think England may, we've missed a few tricks, haven't we? Let's be honest. So let's get stuck into it, Rob. What happened? We won't go through the scorecards. Obviously, everyone can see a scorecard. I think what we need to look at is South Africa's performance first.
Yeah.
They were magnificent. I'm going to doff my cap to South Africa, Rob.
Oh. That's South Africa. If you're listening on the podcast, the Rich has got a South African hat. Ooh. And is it from the 2003 World Cup?
This cap is 19 years old, 5 months and 20-something days old. Yeah, if you've ever played a game of cricket against Newark, you've probably seen some idiot wearing this cap. It's older than at least 3 members of the first team dressing room at my club.
That's in good nick for 19
it's
years.
It's not bad. It's not bad. It's not bad. Look, it's coming apart a little bit, but yeah, that's a little treat for those on video, but also for Rob, because
I think nostalgia.
You were one of my allies in this cap. There are a lot of people that like to see this burnt. I should thank Rob, my teammate yesterday, another Rob who actually brought it because I left it in the dressing room. So,
nice.
Nearly lost it. But yeah, I have a South Africa cap. I wear a South Africa cap every game of cricket I play. So with genuine honesty, this was an amazing performance from South Africa. Kagiso Rabada, Rob, let's get into it. Kagiso Rabada is one of the finest cricketers that's ever done it. And by the end of his career, I think we might be saying that. 5 for 52 off 19. He took the first top three, didn't he? Alex Lees and Crawley early, and then he came back for Ollie Pope, who was the only man in that first innings ring that did anything. I thought Lunga Ngidi on Twitter, he's got such a strong action. He only bowled 5 overs, 12 without wicket, which is very unfortunate. And young Marco Jansen, probably the first time a lot of people are seeing him in England, 2 for 30 off 8, 6'8", Rob. Whew. He's like very narrow Chris Tremlett and left armer. So quite
narrow. Narrow Chris Tremlett.
I think there are 3 Marco Jansens to 1 Chris Tremlett. I think that's how we can do it. And Andrej Nakia, but we prefer calling him Naughty.
Yeah,
because he was again naughty in this innings, wasn't he? 3 for 63 off 13 for him, and he brought some serious wheels into this game. The fearsome foursome, whatever we want to call them, but that is one hell of a bowling attack, Rob.
It might be up there as being the best bowling attack in the world, actually, at the moment. They are just incredible. Rabada went to 250 wickets in this test match, and he's the second fastest man in terms of balls bowled to get to that stage, only behind Dale Steyn. So that's the sort of esteem and shoulder rubbing that he's doing. And his strike rate overall in Test cricket is absolutely phenomenal. Like, Jimmy takes a wicket every, I'm making numbers up here, but like 56, 58 balls. His is like 41. And it's been good for a long time. And during his lean spell, it was about 48, 49. So it's still way above test match average. So he's exceptional. They've got youth on the side. But like you said at the start, there's a lot of pace here throughout. And the addition of Marco Jansen, although he's got a very, it's kind of like an awkward kind of shape, but I think it's to do with the size of his limbs and his body just kind of coiling up.
It doesn't look like he's got much better. He's got a very steady run up. He's got a very steady delivery. So it's all very smooth, but it doesn't look like he's putting a lot into it. But he's pushing it down at good numbers, isn't he? And he's hurrying people up. And what I love about this bowling attack, you've got the Rabada and Giddy, very, very good, very solid, very strong actions, just nice, just there, hitting those areas. Jansen, then you've got the big tall guy from the left arm, the different angle. And then you've got Nakia coming in with just some serious wheels, haven't you? it's got variety, and that's something that the England attack has not had for a long time. Unless you look at one day cricket and our variety becomes four left arm overs instead of four right arm overs.
So are you saying that the variety is right arm over?
It's reverse variety.
But also you put Maharaj into that mix as well, who's an exceptional left-arm bowler. And I thought they actually used him very cleverly in that second innings for England. They brought him on really, really early, got him in front of Zach Crawley early. And any sort of bowling in front of Zach Crawley early is an issue. Zach Crawley, actually, you know, you're talking T20, you talk matchups and all this sort of thing. Left arm orthodox against Zach Crawley. He's scored 109 runs and been out eight times in test cricket alone. So he averages 13. So that, to me, I look at that and go, they've done their analytical work and they've gone, oh, Zach Crawley, he's not very good against right arm, left arm, but let's try left arm spin this time to see if he's any good again. Oh, no, he's struggling against that as well. So just really well-rounded performance. And, you know, did you enjoy the top of the South African innings when they were batting? You've got Irwi, I'm calling him Irwi, scoring 73, but Dean Elgar looking
gritty,
really, really gritty. And there was a moment in the game where it looked like England might be able to break through, but then you saw Maharaj score 41, you saw Marco Jansen go and score 48, and even Naughty Naughty Joe down at the end scoring 20-odd. So I just felt like they were, I know it's a one test match that you're looking at them, but I saw them play the Black Caps down here last summer. I think it finished one apiece in the end. And I came away from that going, their bowling attack's really good. And the batting's really good as well. Varane, I'm calling him Varane. He might be pronounced differently. Their wicketkeeper, I think he scored a ton when he was down against the Black Caps. So I just, they look well-rounded and they look, England are trying to work their way back up to try and find some sort of peak, but aren't there. Whereas this South African team is a few steps ahead of where England are in trying to, you know, be ready for a World Test Championship or a world number one slot.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is where England have missed a trick a little bit, obviously. We look at this game and we're thinking, okay, England outplayed. It's the bowling attack of South Africa that's made all the difference. And it's the batting of England that's not been up to it, basically, in this game. But the bowling attack of England should have been able to do more damage, I think, in this attack. Yes, it was great to see old Gritty Elgar at the top, the skipper. That were without Temba Bavuma, so they had question marks of that middle order. Aidan Markram, the opener, got in ahead of Kea Zonda, which is a bit of a question, really, for South Africa selectors. Maybe that's something that might not. It's one of those things that there's so much politics around cricket South Africa that perhaps that might just cause an issue in the background. Just putting that out there. I'm not saying it is or it isn't, but you're picking the white opener instead of the black middle order player. It just becomes a little bit concerning just because we've had those issues in the past with cricket South Africa. So I don't know what's gone on there.
Delicate grounds.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not making passing judgment on that. I'm just saying, look out, potentially that could be an issue in the future. Markram has even said he will need time if you want him to play in the middle order, but he's been thrown in straight away into the middle order. Yeah. So even himself was saying, look, I don't know if I'm a middle order player. And I'm a huge fan of Markram. I thought he was going to be world-beating opener, but he hasn't quite done it yet, has he? But it's great to see. You've got the experience of Irwi at the top of the order with Elgar, yes, and it makes it difficult. Keegan Peterson is not somebody that's going to rip the world alight at the moment. Markram there. Rassie van der Dusen is a good player, but again, that's your five. And then you're into a 22-year-old who's only played seven or eight test matches in Marco Jansen. Then you're into the wicketkeeper that's not played many tests. And then you're into your four bowlers. England should have been able to attack this lineup much, much better. The fact that it was 326 and they were able to win by an innings is not good enough from a bowling point of view, in my opinion. Well done, South Africa. I love their positive intent. They were great, aggressive with the ball, and they played positively without being reckless with the batting all the way through. And they really had the, you know, the Dean Elgar gripped all the way down through the innings down to number 10 and 11. But that's, for me, where England have really missed a trick. We should not have allowed this batting card to win by an innings, as simple as that. It's not good enough as a batting card to win by an innings in any game.
And they scored at a good lick as well, didn't they? Like, it was over four 3 60s. And a half and over. Yeah. And I know there was runs added towards the end, but I got to ask, what is the theory or the consistency in approach of when a tail ender comes to the crease that we start banging in it halfway down?
Because it's club cricket, mate. It really is. It's like, oh, look at me. I'm a quick bowler. I'm going to try and bump everyone out. No, just bowl it at the bottom of his off stump. Bowl it at the bottom of his middle stump. Clean him up. Yeah. It's time and time again, isn't it, with England? I don't understand why we've got this idea that we... I mean, it doesn't matter who's in charge, whether it's captain or coach, we still go back to that same theory.
It's frustrating. It's frustrating to watch, and I've not understood it. Use a short ball as a setup, but don't use it as your tactic, because essentially you've got someone who's inept at scoring big runs in Test cricket, and averages, some of these guys down the bottom average 6 and 8, and we allowed them to score runs and get in and see the ball. And, you know, just because you're bowling short doesn't mean you're going to get a wicket either, like top edge for 4, top edge for 6. You're creating different opportunities for them to score rather than just going, we've got a good attacking field, I'm good enough to bowl you out. Because, you know, they are good enough to bowl them out because they've managed to bowl out the top 6 or 7 that come before it. So I don't get it. I don't like it. And it's almost like, for us, you remember when Kohli got his bowlers to do it to Jimmy and it created a reaction at the England team and they lost that test match? It might have been the second test match or first test match when India were over here last year. It's almost like since that's happened, we've gone and done it a few times, and we're not the right team to be doing that.
I don't get it. Bowl at the stumps. You know, you've got that ball. It becomes a surprise ball. But if you're going to start digging the ball in every single delivery, it's great if nothing is happening against really top quality players. But when you're talking about lower order tail players, have it as a surprise delivery. Get them coming forward and then put the short ball in. That's where you're going to get them in trouble. Not bowling every single ball so they can camp on their back foot. It just does me. So wrapping up South Africa's performance then, second innings, Maharaj, like you say, he came on very, very early, didn't he? Did he even open? No, he was quite early in the game.
It was like the sixth or seventh over, they brought him in.
Yeah. And I mean, we'll get on to England in a moment, but Crawley, what on earth are you doing sweeping that early in the innings? Goodness me. Ollie Pope as well, straight bat, lad, straight bat. But then Nokia, he was really the guy that just knocked the heart out of this innings, wasn't he? Johnny Bairstow went, Alex Lees went, Folkes went, second ball. He just ripped that middle order apart. Johnny Bairstow was not able to have any impact on this game. We knew that he was going to drop off from the ridiculous four test matches he's played so far, or three test matches out of the four, whatever it was. It was going to drop off, but it was just, when you've got a bowler that can come in with that pace and that aggression, and he was so pumped up and ripped the middle order, it was just no chance for England. You know, we had the cameo from Broad later on. It was fun. But just an all-round quality bowling display from Rabada and Giddy, Nokia, Jansen, and obviously in the second innings, Maharaj as well. So well-earned win from South Africa. We cannot complain about that as English fans. It was a joy to watch the way they went about the business. Not going to call it bouch ball. Don't like that. Don't like baz ball.
No, don't like anything with the ball in it. It's just cricket and an approach to playing. Don't be a knob about it. There we go. Don't be a knob about it.
Don't be a dick, mate.
Are England trying to be too aggressive?
Well, apparently, according to Brendan McCullum, they could have been a bit more positive a few times. So no. I think it's times. You've got to pick when we play this positive baseball type cricket. At the top of the order, we need to just settle in. It's, you know, if the bowler half volley, make sure you've got the confidence and you've got the backing to hit it. If it's a one down there and you can pull it to the fence, cut it, whatever you need to do. But just let's think a little bit more. Let's just dig in a little bit more. We're not asking for Sibley-esque opening. I'm sure some people are, but I don't want to quite swing it all the way back to that. But we've got big problems at the top of the order. I like Alex Lees. He was the player that I wanted to see coming over the winter, and he did. He's done okay. I don't know how long he's going to get or how long he should have before the opportunity runs out. Played really well at Trent Bridge against New Zealand and done bits and pieces after. Zach Crawley, you're going to get into in a moment. And Ollie Pope, I think, is a player who batted very well in this one, 73 in the first innings. Didn't really trouble in the second innings, 5 runs. I think he's a player that's going to do enough. Sorry, he's going to have a score often enough just to keep himself in there. And McCullum has talked about really wanting that loyalty of selection to create, you know, that tight-knit dressing room. And he seems to suggest as well that being loyal and giving players plenty of opportunities is good for people on the outside looking in, because they'll see the loyalty when they finally get their chance. I'm going to I'm not sure about that, I'll be honest, because if I'm looking at people and they've had a million chances and you're sat there scoring 1,000 runs like Harry Brook is, and like one or two others are potentially, then, well, what do I have to do to get my chance? You've got to pick players at the right time. If you start picking them as they're going down the wrong side of the hill, it's too late. you've got to pick them when they're at their absolute form, aren't you? And at the moment, there are players in this England batting lineup that aren't hitting full form, and there are players outside that are. Problem is, they're not openers.
Yeah, that is very true. I like positivity. And I think you can be, we spoke about it before on the pod, it was quite a while ago, but you can be positive in everything you do. And the openers can still be positive without being reckless. And I thought Alex Lees really looked out his depth against Rabada. And that's not a criticism, because a lot of people do. Mm. But Rabada was just on a different level to what Alex Lees was. And the shot that came from it was almost like, just someone that wasn't, they were fried. Like, they were completely done. No idea what's coming down and no idea what to do about it. So what's the approach? Best form of defense is attack. I'm sure they're sort of, they've probably got different ways of saying it. Mm. And it comes out with a drive to something that's, you know, going way over the stumps, nicks off. And it creates question marks about the, about whether that's the mentality for a test match opener for me with Lees.
Yeah.
I don't think it's too early to cut Lees down yet. I think he's worth more investment as a player.
Yeah,
Crawley, on the other hand, I saw what McCullum said that you mentioned. I read the article saying he could win as tests. I completely agree. Zach Crawley can win as a test match. Zach Crawley isn't the lone responsibility of why we lose a test match either.
No.
But are we going to win more test matches with an opener coming in and finding someone that can average 35 or bat time or do something, or have Zach Crawley, who now sits with 18 test matches as an opener, 779 runs, an average of 22.25 as an opener. Out of everyone that's batted 18 times for England since the start of 2000, that is the worst, which is not great. And then if you look at every single England batsman that's ever batted for England as an opener, there's 61 of them that's played 18 times. His is the third worst in front of two players. That's overall the third worst of all time. It's not a good position for Zach Crawley to be in. I don't think he looks good against right arm. I don't think he looks good against left arm. I spoke about his stats against spin. He averages 26 against seam, 23 against spin. Left arm spinners have got him out 8 times. Right arm medium bowlers average 19 against him. Like, there's nothing there, and there's nothing in his first class career. I feel like I'm on repeat from 2 months ago that gives me any impression that he should be opening in test match cricket for England.
Yeah, and that's the problem, isn't it? I like Zach Crawley as a player. He looks like he should be a player. He's probably a good guy, but I just don't understand how we can be so loyal to this guy at this point in time. There is a school of thought that is take him out, let him relax, let him get his game back again, go away, and maybe make a push for the squad over the winter for any test cricket that's coming up over there. We're not saying discard Zach Crawley. It's the same as like with an Ollie Pope. It's like he might be a player that's in and out a little bit, like Ian Bell was, and then he finally finds his feet. Johnny Bairstow, let's remember, Johnny Bairstow has been in and out of this team in different roles more than we can mention. But you just wonder if the best thing for Zach Crawley soon will be to get him out of the firing line.
I think so.
Again, McCullum also added that, you know, Zach's going to win his games, but Zach is going to be one of them players that is inconsistent. Baz. He is not inconsistent. He is incredibly consistent at the moment, and that is the problem. I don't want to be too harsh, but come on, you know, we need to look at this. But the problem then becomes, and we'll talk about this another day, you know, this is the same squad for two games. Let's just get that out of the way. We're not going to be discussing replacements. Zach Crawley and Alex Lees are opening the batting at Old Trafford on Wednesday. Simple. But we need to then have that conversation again of who's the option. There are plenty of names we can throw out, but genuinely, who is the option? Who is going to be the one that comes back? So I don't think we're into the next cab off the rank, because some of those young players like Haynes and others injured, not had the best of years. We're going to be looking at a retread, aren't we? Somebody that's already done the job, and we're looking at bringing someone back in, whether it's a Jennings, whether it's a Burns, whether it's somebody like that. Or do we go completely crazy Bazball and give Harry Brook the opening shot? I don't know. I think that'd be very unfair. I say no to that as well.
Definitely not against this bowling attack, but I do think it is time to look elsewhere. I don't think Burns has done anything different to warrant a call-up. We analysed his technique on TikTok months ago and there wasn't a great deal of change. Whereas Dom Sidley, you could see a lot of change, but I think Dom Sidley's change needs more time of scoring runs and getting back to what he was in County Cricket, which is a heavy, heavy run scorer. So he needs more time. Hamid maybe got dropped a little bit too early. Don't know if he fits the mold of what McCullum wants as an opener. I still think that they need someone that can bat time at the top. And then you get into your Ben Comptons of the world and people like that who's had genuine good years in County Championship cricket. Do you give someone like that a run? I'm not sure. I don't think we're going to solve it. But I think the second test match, unless Crawley scores 100, he's gone.
We'll see. In the opinions, you know, a lot of people will be that he's already on borrowed time, but it's whether or not this setup believes that. And we have to be very careful because if you start carrying players for too long, it will start having a negative impact. Yes, they all want their mates and their teammates to do really well. But at the same time, if people aren't pulling their weight, people are going to start getting frustrated, especially when you start losing games of cricket. Winning, don't worry about it, mate. Arm around the shoulder. Next time, you'll be fine. You start losing, people are like, I don't like losing. Why are we losing? Well, top order, they're not doing it, are they?
Exactly. Someone's got to be accountable along the line. Yeah. Unless you're doing everything poorly, then someone's got to be accountable. Your top order, your openers, your middle order, the wicket keepers dropping the ball, or the opening bowlers don't take any wickets, whatever it might be. Someone, the book stops for someone. Normally the coach at some point, if it's Chris Silverwood, but he probably hasn't got his best team on the field anyway because he's rotated them. Question marks. You mentioned Harry Brook.
Yep.
Exceptional year, mate. The problem is he can't get in this team. How do you solve that problem of having a really good young player scoring a bucket load of runs and you can't see him?
Yeah. I mean, you know, Harry Brook has continued to score runs wherever he plays, no matter what outfit he puts on, no matter what ball he's facing, he's continued to score runs this summer. They played a warm-up game, didn't they, against South Africa? The Lions did. And England absolutely destroyed South Africa. So maybe we pick that team. Who knows? Brook got 140 against South Africa, against a decent bowling attack. Ben Duckett got 145 against South Africa. These are players on the outside looking in who are consistently playing well. Brook is in the squad and has been in the squad most of the summer. I think it's an absolute travesty that one of the most informed players we've seen in years is not able to break this England team. I don't understand it. I think it's worth a conversation of where we can fit him in. And it's not reacting to a defeat. I think he should have been in at the start of the summer. When we saw the form he had at the start of the summer, he should have been in. He's not an opener. It'd be wrong to put him as an opener. There's no one else in this 11 that you would say is an opener. So there's no way we can rejig things. I don't want to see Pope at 3, let alone as an opener. I would rather have seen Pope at 4. It's back to that conversation of Root at 3, isn't it? Root, who scored, I think, 14 runs in this test. That's a big problem for England. When Root doesn't score runs, this is the outcome. Johnny Bairstow got 18 runs in the innings. Stokes, 40. That's the problem in a game like this. We rely so heavily on 4, 5, and 6. So where do you fit him in? I've been a big proponent of giving Johnny Bairstow a run in the team at number 5 or 6. I don't give him the gloves, blah, blah, blah. I love Ben Folkes. But the question does start to be asked is, it becomes a question of Folkes or Brook, perhaps. And if that is the conversation and you say, Bairstow, can you have the gloves again? I'm sure he's happy to take the gloves. And then for me, if I say Folkes or Brook, I'm starting to look at, I want to see Harry Brook because I want to see what he can become, because I think he will be a better player potentially than an Ollie Pope, than some of these other guys we've tried. It's tough on Folkes, isn't it? But I don't know if that's the way they're going to think soon, but you've got to find a way of getting Harry Brook an opportunity this summer.
Yeah, you're trying to solve the problem, because if England are going to play this aggressive manner, you almost want as much batting in there as possible because it's going to fail. Yeah. You've got Ben Stokes, who is coming down the track every third ball, that's an exaggeration, but a lot, trying to hit over the top. He's a better player than getting himself out doing that more often than not. He's a better player than that. He's a guy that can average and has averaged 40 over the last few years in Test cricket by being aggressive, but playing within a range that's kind of acceptable for Test cricket and the dismissals that you incur playing that way. So I kind of want to see Stokes reining in. Folkes has been good when he played. He was good against New Zealand. He finished off games a couple of times and, he scored that 100 when he first played for England. We wanted to see him in the team, but it does come back to balance. And, if we didn't have all the injuries that we had, and you had an in-form Chris Wokes playing test matches at home, averaging 20 with the ball and averaging 25, 30 with the bat, playing at number eight, then you've probably not got the same conversations. You're not trying to fix the same things. Whereas you are, and we're all going, we want to see Brook. We want to see if he's got it. If I'm Brendan McCullum, I probably want to see him before you go and tour Pakistan, I think it is, this winter. You can't really throw a young lad in first innings down in Pakistan.
And again, what does it say to these young players if you're not giving them an opportunity when they are scoring a ridiculous sum of runs in everything they do? You can't. He has not done anything wrong at any point. He's done everything you've asked of a player to do who's on the outside looking in, and he still can't get an opportunity.
Yeah,
you know, there's got to be a way of getting him in.
It's hard on him because it was him or Bairstow at the start of the year, and Bairstow's just been outstanding. And ideally, you don't want to touch Bairstow in that lineup. You don't want to move him or make him do anything else. So the gloves would have to go to a Pope or a Bairstow to accommodate Brook coming in. England are probably going to look at it and go, well, we've won four test matches and lost one. We're probably not going to do anything different for now. We'll keep going. We might change the bowling around a little bit, which is more common than changing your top six, seven batsmen. And there is something nice about having a genuine wicket keeper in your team who's clean, consistent, and does things well. And his batting's been fine. He's averaging 30 maybe as a wicket keeper in test cricket. It's not bad.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Don't get us wrong. I mean, we're huge fans of Ben Folkes, the cricketer, and it's just we're a bit jealous of Ben Folkes, the person. He's a good-looking boy, isn't he?
You know, he's very good-looking.
We're not a huge fan of that. No, we don't need that. Not the ability and the good look. So, look, we want to see him given an opportunity, but you have to start. I'm only at this point because I'm thinking I can't see another way of getting Harry Brook into this team, and I think he deserves it more than anybody. So that's where it's coming out. I think it's very, very difficult on Folkes for what we're discussing. Nothing's going to change dramatically in this team. Nothing's going to change quickly. That's obviously the mentality that McCullum has brought in, and I'm sure Stokes will share as well. So it's going to take something to dislodge somebody out of this lineup, isn't it? It could be an injury, and that's what we don't want. You mentioned quickly about Wokes or somebody at eight. That does obviously, when you've got that player, I mean, I heard Andrew Strauss talking about it on commentary, talking about, you've usually got an Craig Overton or a Chris Wokes, and that's always papered over the cracks of the batting lineup, woes for me.
Yes.
You pick your best four bowlers, and at the moment, Stuart Anderson, what a player he would be.
It would be useful.
Stuart Broad, Jimmy Anderson, Matty Potts, who's had a great summer, and Jack Leach. It's weird, isn't it? Firstly, on Jack Leach, he didn't do a lot in this test. Obviously, 1 for 42 and his one bowl did okay.
Yeah.
Jack Leach, doesn't seem to be any more conversations about spinners, does there? It seems it's Leach or Leach. Parkinson's gone by the wayside at the moment. Maybe that's because he's not playing red ball cricket at the moment in the background. Who knows? Potts, I think, has had a good summer, so he deserves his spot. Jimmy Anderson, 40-year-old Jimmy Anderson. Wow. Mm. Talk of Jimmy Anderson. When I was first wearing this cap in the 2003 World Cup, England-Australia, a very young Jimmy Anderson was playing in that quarterfinals or Super Six, sorry, against Australia. That's how long this cap has been on.
Wow.
Basically, my cap is the age of Jimmy Anderson's career.
That's a good effort, Mike. And they're both in good nick.
yeah, pretty good. I think he's in better nick than that cap, to be fair. What do we do with this lineup? For me, on the outside looking in, you've got Robinson, you've got Craig Overton in the squad. Jamie Overton was not selected in this squad at the moment. There's still no Mark Wood. I think he's starting to come back. He played a bit of club cricket, didn't he?
Scary. Don't fancy that.
Jofra Archer's not around. Ollie Stone in between signing for Knox. Weird. Very confused with that signing on all sides of that. I'd love to talk about that another day. Where would you go? There's nobody in this squad, the Overton or Robinson, who I think needs to come in. We've got three right arm overs in, or four even if you talk about Stokes. Do we want to replace it with another right arm over? It doesn't give us anything. There's no extra pace there, is there, unless you're bringing Jamie Overton?
Yeah. The only change I would make, if it's any, and if he's fit and got the right mentality, would be at some stage over the three-match series, Ollie Robinson would come in for an Anderson or a Broad if they need resting. But it is the end of the summer. They might want to play it, or if Matty Potts isn't quite working out. That's the only potential change I would make. And you make a good point on the Jack Leach spin conversation, because that dominated the early stages. But remember, he took that 10 for against New Zealand. the third test maybe or second test, and the test that Matt Parkinson had, although very rushed and thrown into the mix the last minute on a pitch where no spin had any joy, and Ajaz Patel fresh off a tenfer in one innings in India, bowled two overs in the whole game. But I think that's kind of put it to bed for a while, and everyone looks at it and go, Jack Leach gives us better control in a test match and can play, you know, his attacking game might not be the best in the world, but the control that he gives is a lot better than what we saw from Parkinson.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's worth noting as well, there's no criticism of Anderson and Broad here whatsoever when we're talking about this bowling lineup. I mean, they've not bowled for quite some time because of the scheduling. It's ridiculous. They're rocking up to this with just a bit of net time behind them. It is absolutely ludicrous, the lack of preparation, you know, some of these test cricketers have had coming into this. So let's be aware of that as well. You know, maybe next second test, third test, we really get going. Hopefully it's not too late though. But yeah, overall, I don't see that there's going to be wholesale changes at all. I don't even think there'll be one change in this team.
There might be a bowling
if somebody's not quite 100%. That's the only change I can envisage. But there are big conversations coming down the road. And it's not, let's just remember again, we're not saying this because England have lost one game of cricket and we're losing our minds. It's just because there are questions, even when we're winning games of cricket, there have been the same questions. Opener, Pope at three. Middle order, is it the right organisation? Folks, is he the question? They've been there all along, haven't they? They've just been, we've just not had to worry about it because Stokes and Root and Bairstow have gone completely ballistic.
So test match is Wednesday, and I think it's at
Old Trafford.
Manchester, yep, that's nice.
Old Trafford.
South Africa is currently sitting on 72 points, 75% point percentage in the World Test Championship. Top of the table, Rich. 1-6, lost 2, and that includes beating India at home after being 1-0 down when India went and conquered Centurion, I think it was. So South Africa, very good. They're a dominating team at home, except when England tore there. To be fair, England down in seventh, 17 games we've played. You know, South Africa's only played 8. It's a strange tournament. And 31.37% of the points. Yeah. So we're just above New Zealand and Bangladesh.
I think this is
a bigger series as we wrap up. It's a bigger series for South Africa than it is for England. For England, it's a feel process. We're trying to give people time. We're trying to see how well they do. South Africa, firm eyes on the prize, have a real high chance of making the final two for the World Chess Championship. So I feel like they've got more to lose now, especially being 1-0 up.
I think you're right. Yeah, I think they're looking at this in a completely different way, aren't they? I think we want to go and win games of cricket, but this is just a series. England haven't really got the eye on the World Test Championship because of, I don't know, whatever. I don't really know. It's weird. I'll be honest, full disclosure, I haven't really got into World Test Championship yet. I don't really know why. It's just not something I'm following.
It's a strange tournament.
Yeah, it just hasn't caught my imagination or caught my attention at all. So it is what it is. But yeah, South Africa, we're looking at it. And suddenly, when you get near the top of something, you start going, interesting. I quite like, I'm being top of that. But when you're down amongst it, it's not really a focus, is it? But cricket, South Africa have really gone about their business well under Elgar, under Boucher. They've quietly gone about the business. They've got a very, very positive, aggressive approach without, like I said, at the top being reckless. I think they're a really, really solid cricketing country and a really solid cricketing test side at the moment. It's going to be a tough series for England to get back into. If South Africa put England in again, first innings at Old Trafford, and England's top order doesn't fire, I think this could be a quick route to 3-0 to South Africa. It could go on the toss. I think a little bit of this game went on the toss in the first test. It could go on the toss again. If England win the toss, England will put South Africa in and England will be chasing in the fourth innings. And then there's a different mentality. But I'd like to see England show that they can do it from the off. They can set the tempo for the game, not just chase and match the tempo.
Yeah, so, it almost falls under the whole Josh Butler conversation with Mark Rampage. Yes. Going, not quite sure how to pace it when we're not chasing, where it becomes a T20 game. So very, very interesting. Great to be back on the podcast. Great to have a little bit of Red Bull to finish off the summer as well. Comment below and let us know. The hat's on Rich's head. He's loving life. We're going to be back again after the second test match has been and done, which means we'll probably see you on Friday afternoon after the test match finishes in 2.5 days. But we're going to be optimistic. We're going to be optimistic. We're going to be aggressive in our podcasting, and we'll be there at the end of play. Thank you so much for listening. We'll catch you guys next time.